Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Hello, good evening. Here we are again, Wednesday night, live in the Sheffield Live studios. It's Deserted Island Discs. It's the show where we get people who are from the island of Ireland and now living in South Yorkshire. So I've been struggling for the last few weeks to find an Irish person to come on a show. But thankfully tonight I found one. So we've got Kevin Jones. Hello, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm good, Ben. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming to the show. As I say, we've been doing the show for nearly a year now, and I think I've used up all my contacts. Every Irish person I've ever met in Sheffield has been on the show, so we're looking for more. So if any listeners are out there, contact the show. It's Deserted Island, spelt like the island of Ireland, desertedislanddiscs@gmail.com. So get in touch if you know anyone that would be good for the show. So we spend an hour hearing about people's lives, and it'll be punctuated by music as we go along. So Kevin's his song choices are amazing. So we've been doing the show for a bit, and we do get a lot of people just, you know, very similar songs come up. We have a lot of Dubliners, that kind of stuff. So Kevin's done 6 songs for us, and I only know one of them. I've only heard one of them before, so it's going to be a great show. So thanks for doing that. So we're going to have a good hour talking about your life and music. But to start with, Kevin, we start at the beginning. So tell us about where were you born, when were you born, and like earliest memories.
Yeah, so I was born in Belfast, specifically in West Belfast, in June, 18th of June 1987. Some identifiable info there. In the Royal Victoria Hospital on the Falls Road. We lived at the time on Stewartstown Road, which is up the very, very top end of the Falls Road, top end of West Belfast, sort of Dunmurray is the area.
It's a very Catholic area, then.
It's a Catholic, nationalist, and Republican area, sort of right by that house we lived in was right by a famous barracks called Woodburn Barracks.
Yeah.
Which was the scene of, some attacks and.
Yeah, so was that barracks where British soldiers
were? British soldiers were there. It was an RUC posting, obviously, but there was also soldiers stationed there and stuff as well. So that's where we lived at the time where I was born. But then,
it's the time when we had the Good Friday Agreement in 1997. So you'd be 10 at that point. But before that, it was still kind of you'd see lots of stuff going on around your area.
Definitely. So wider family, like grandparents lived in the White Rock, which is like a really Republican area. All my cousins lived across West Belfast and sort of Republican, what would have been in the time IRA strongholds. So not very many, not somewhere the police could come in.
Right.
You know, if you got your car nicked and you wanted to phone the police, that was a no-no. The police came in, they would come in with the army. There was army foot patrols. So some of my earliest memories, it's just, walking out your door, do you know, to kick the ball about or do whatever as a young child, and just being soldiers, constant presence.
Was it those kind of terraced houses I see a lot in films and stuff? Was you in a, no?
No, we were in like a new build council. It was like a new build council house.
Okay.
At that time, and it was like townhousey kind of almost. Like, not like 21st century townhouses, but sort of like that.
Yeah.
And then we moved, I think we moved when I was about 3 or 4, just down the road to a slightly nicer house, which was a semi.
Yeah.
That would have been probably about 92, 93. So like a lot of great memories. I'm very, very lucky. I come from a great family. My parents parents have been through a lot in their life before I was born and during my lifetime. But a very, very loving family. And despite growing up in sort of tumultuous times, I had always had their their support and a big extended family, like kind of stereotypical, like a lot of cousins you know.
Sounds about it. Then. So is it on your mum and dad's side? Like, was your mum like one of many? Or she?
Well, she only has. So she's one of three sisters. Right. She's the oldest.
Small.
Of three. Small. But then my dad's side, he was one of, let me do the maths here, six.
Yeah.
And then they had loads of kids. And so on my dad's side, all of my cousins and stuff were a lot older. My dad was the youngest by 10 years.
Yeah.
So both of my parents came from the White Rock, which is up beside, I mean, famous, it's off the Falls Road, up the top towards the Black Mountain. It's right beside Ballymurphy, which is the scene of a famous, you know, unfortunate event, the Ballymurphy Massacre. They grew up beside people like Gerry Adams. My mum went to school with Colette, Gerry Adams' wife.
Yeah.
They were in and amongst, you know, the conflict proper, in the 70s.
So they've been 70s going up in that 70s area and being around at that time,
Because
you were saying, like, I suppose it's for your generation that you kind of feel a bit lucky and that you probably didn't know what was going on until it kind of stopped, I suppose, or you didn't really understand any different.
Yeah, you didn't really understand any different, and there's a weird thing that that people of my generation, sort of like 30s and even early 40s, we're often, there's like a competitive, not a competitive thing at home, but like, you know, we're often having a phrase in Belfast called, which I think is probably in England, called wind your neck in, you know, you know, we're always saying, well, wasn't that bad for you, do you know, and the generation before lived through some really, really terrible events, but the legacy of that, so people think the peace deal was signed in 1998 and it all went away.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen like that. There's still turmoil there now, bubbling under the surface, you know, 30 years later almost.
Yeah.
So I had, you know, lots of experiences as a child that you realise aren't normal. When you start travelling the world and meeting people outside of Belfast.
Yeah.
And even within Belfast, different people had different experiences. If you grew up in a more affluent area, you were less exposure to it, do you know? But, you know, if you went into the city centre, you still had to go through the checkpoints.
Yeah.
I remember this memory is getting my mum's bag searched by soldiers, going to the shopping centre, all that kind of stuff, curfew in the city centre.
Well, and then I suppose your parents would try and normalise it a bit, or not?
Oh, for sure, yeah. So they did a really good job of trying to protect.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of parents did that, you know, trying to protect their children from it. You know, they were never shy of expressing their opinions. But they did a lot to protect us and give us a really, you know, loving childhood.
Trying to be as normal, I suppose, as possible you can be in that situation.
Yeah. And it is, there's been some great sort of, great sort of cultural stuff, great books and great TV shows recently that is a real testimony that sort of paints the picture of Belfast people and Irish people in general, but Belfast people and people from the north in particular are being really resilient and actually just getting on with their day and having the crack, as we say, even though they're surrounded by madness.
Yeah,
you know, things like Derry Girls is a great example of that.
Yeah.
That's kind of my generation. Watching stuff like that is like that. This early mid late 90s.
Yeah.
My sister's 7 years older than me. She would have been about the same, you know, same age as them. But despite all of that going on, very early childhood. Yeah, a lot of weird things. Seen a lot of burnt out cars. Seen a few riots. There were soldiers patrolling my street. But really, I have happy memories from that time. So it seems maybe bizarre to say, but you know.
Well, that's what you know, isn't it? That's what you got. Do you have siblings?
So I've got one sister, older sister, who's seven years older. So she was born in 1980. She was actually born in Derry. She's a Derry girl. So my parents lived in Roswell Flats in Derry, which are famous for all the wrong reasons. They're the Bloody Sunday flats. They're not there anymore. And she was born in 1980 in Derry, so she's 7 years ahead of me.
Yeah. And how did your parents meet then? They
lived five doors down from each other on the White Rock Drive in West Belfast. But they didn't really know each other until they were teenagers.
Yeah,
my mum was actually born, she was born in Beechmount, which is another area of the Falls Road, in complete, I will say, absolute poverty. Three families shared with multiple children shared a, you know, up and down terraced house.
One house, yeah.
Toilet out the back. She was born in 1955.
Yeah.
Really terrible living conditions, similar as they were for lots of working class people in the north of England and in Scotland as well. It wasn't unique to Belfast, but they eventually met then when they were moved. She moved to his street and they met when they were teenagers, just knocking about. I think, you know, my dad played music and stuff, so she might have seen him about in somebody's front room playing the guitar, do you know? Like,
well, it's a good look, isn't it, playing the guitar?
Sometimes. Can be a curse too.
So did they start going out as teenagers? And
They got married. Well, they got married as teenagers. They got married. Mum was 19. Yeah. Dad was 21.
They're still together.
And they're still together, So they got married in, God, I should know this, shouldn't I? I think, if Mum was born in...
Yeah, don't matter.
We don't need the radio, the pondering on our lives, do we? But early 70s.
So talking to your dad playing music, does that take us to your first song choice?
It does. My first song choice, Ben, is indeed my father, Jerry Jones, and his old friend Michael Clarkson, from an album they made, I think, around 30 years ago now. And it's a song written by his friend Brian Moore, who was a fantastic songwriter that I'll talk a bit more about. It's an immigration song. It's a song about moving away from Belfast. So obviously it's close to me because it's my dad, but it resonates with me.
Because I've moved away from Belfast. All right, let's give it a go. The Shipyard Slips by Michael Clarkson and Jerry Jones.
I am on my way on a ship that was built for the tourist trade, and I leave me friends and the land where I was born, and I won't return till my fortune is made. For I've served me time with the island men, and I've known good times and work a plenty, but there's no work now in these troubled times, and the shipyard slips are lying empty. Farewell, me father and me mother, fair old age has placed its hand upon you. You love me well, and you never failed, and it's leaving your side my heart will rue. I promise to write when I settle down, just to ease your mind, cause I know you'll worry, but think of the day when I return. Don't count the hours, for time won't hurry. And I've served me time with the island men, and I've known good times and work a plenty. There's no work now in these troubled times, and the shipyard slips are lying empty. Remember the mountains and the fresh north air. I'll think of the girls with their friendly smiles, and I'll think of the city and the friends that I have there, and hope that my love transcends the miles. I'm going away to look for work, but I live for the day of my returning to a job at home, and peace of mind for the Belfast people I will always be yearning. For I've served me time with the island men, and I've known good times and work a plenty. There's no work now in these troubled times, and the shipyard slips are lying empty.
Beautiful, beautiful. The Shipyard Slips. So that's Michael Clarkson and Jerry Jones. So that's your dad, Jerry.
Yeah, that's my dad, Jerry. Talking about where it all began, obviously it began with my dad, but music is a massive part of my life.
So what was his, it's not all about you.
Let's get back to a bit more about him.
I was going to say about his musical, career or how much he did.
So he's not a professional. Well, actually, he's technically a professional musician now at 71, and he's retired because he's doing that's the only bit of work that he's still doing.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he played. He was really into music. I think from when he was a teenager. Probably started off being into rock and roll. He was into the Stones, Neil Young, kind of a hippie. Yeah. Neil Young, Joni Mitchell, Americana kind of stuff. And then he got into trad and Irish music and sort of like protest music and stuff like that. He played throughout the years. So, I mean, he wasn't... He was a jack of all trades. There was no work back then, you know.
Yeah.
He was a taxi driver, which we'll talk about in the... A black taxi driver we'll talk about a bit later. Window cleaner, he worked in shops and all sorts. And then he went to uni as a mature student to do history.
Wow.
And then became a history teacher, and that was his career. Yeah, but he didn't start teaching until he was in his, I think, it was about 30, 31 maybe.
Right. So he's obviously got some brains there.
Oh, he does, yeah. Somewhere in there. No, both parents, very, 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 very intelligent and very, very cool people. But he's played music for years, traditional, plays like protest kind of stuff, and he'll play Americana.
Does he play live
stuff.
Still now?
Oh. Yeah, he does that. He's retired from teaching now, 73, 74, and he plays loads of trad sessions all across the city
The Fleur's there, isn't it, this year?
Yeah, he'll be playing, he'll be doing loads of stuff as part of that, so I plan to go over for the week.
Yeah, that'd be good. So where'd it be in pubs in Belfast where they are?
Yeah. So he'd be all over the place. He does like a thing called the Wren Boys, which is like more of a cultural thing. They do Irish language songs and some little bits of like sort of theatre, street theatre and stuff.
Ah, cool.
But he'd be playing in the likes of the Sunflower Pub, Madden's, which is a long-standing.
So for listeners that don't know, so the Fleur is like Irish traditional music festival every year, and they have competitions, don't they, to say who's the best fiddle player, who's the best boron player. And it's just a festival of Irish traditional music, really, isn't it? And it's in different cities every year. But it's the first time it's been in Belfast ever. So it's just be amazing for people to go along. It'd be place will be packed on it.
Yeah, it'll be amazing. It's massive. There's the sort of old traditional thing of the competitions and stuff, but there's also the... it just turns into a whole street festival. There's music everywhere and every street corner. And it's great for the city, great for tourism.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's a really special thing. Really, really, really excited about it.
So you're gonna go?
I'm going to bring my son over, my partner over, and we'll spend the week there and soak it all up, yeah.
Fantastic. Well, we'll get on to your son a bit later on, but... talk about your music then. So we've got more your teenage years, really. So we've not really got very far, have you, in your life so far?
So teenage years, yeah. So childhood, really, really happy. Teenage years, I would say, a bit more complicated. So even though, you know, peace processes, the Good Friday Agreement signed, there's still, you know, the guns didn't disappear overnight.
Yeah.
There was no decommissioning until 2003 on the Republican side. And on the Loyalist side, in fact, there are still arms being used. And loyalism kind of turned into organised crime in a way. But I moved to a nicer area. So my dad's, my family were doing a bit better. Let's just say my dad started teaching.
Yeah.
And then we moved to more like middle classy, basically, area is how I would describe it.
Yeah.
But so it's a nicer street.
Yeah.
And a slightly bigger house when I was about 11 or 12. But it's in what's called a mixed area in Belfast. Yeah. So it's on an interface beside it. So it's a, you know, Catholic area, and then there's a mixed area, and then there's a Loyalist housing estate. So unfortunately, as an 11, 12-year-old and as a teenager, I got into a lot of bother that I wasn't looking for. I wasn't misbehaving, or not more than a usual teenager is, but yeah, just got into some trouble being a Catholic in certain areas, you know, and there was some violence, and there was some stuff like that, which at the time you kind of just, it's part of, it seems normal in Belfast.
Yeah.
But it's really affected me later on in my life, you know, the idea of someone wanting to hurt you or attack you because of who you are.
Yeah.
It's actually, you don't understand it as a teenager, but when you get older, you understand that that's like, yeah, powerful stuff.
It makes me
feel sad, and makes me feel, makes me feel worried that some of that those feelings still exist at home. Unfortunately,
I'm sure they do. And it's something really alien to us. That's those are the things like you're saying are growing up. So like you're saying, your parents' generation more in phase, but those things definitely still carried on for your generation. And you think that's kind of part of that moving? So in the bit where you grew up to start, it was kind of 100% Catholic.
Yeah.
And that's probably, you didn't have anyone to fight against, so you weren't getting, you know, pointed out as different.
Yeah.
But you moved to this mixed place where it was a bit more, you had to interact a bit more, and it was kind of,
yeah,
the conflict was there more, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. It was like, you still got into little, you know, you get into the wee scraps and stuff, and when I was a young kid, but, you know, very silly stuff, you know, you nicked my football, and, you know, young kids sort of play fighting and that sort of thing. But yeah, I was moving into the mixed area and then realising, oh, somebody, it was the first time kind of realising, understanding, you've been told it and you know that people hate each other because of their background, whether they identify as Irish or British. I like to take the religion out of it because I think the religion is not...
Yeah, it's not the main point.
It's not the point of it, and it's misunderstood around the world and in England, I think about that. But it was a realisation of, oh God, people really hate me and I don't know why.
And
you've done
nothing, have you?
I've done nothing, I'm just walking down the street, you know.
And you're getting shouted at, yeah.
You get shouted at. There was boys throwing bricks at our school bus.
Yeah.
You know, it's
scary stuff.
We would get jumped and stuff if we were in the wrong place wearing the uniform or the wrong football top, you know.
So
like not a great experience in hindsight, but, you know, yeah, I had a good family and a lot of support, so I was lucky in that sense.
Yeah, you got through it.
Yeah.
Well, let's go back to the next choice of music. So you've got the Falls Road Taxi Man, which again is kind of related to your dad, is it? Yeah.
It is, yeah. So before he got into teaching and went to uni and all that, for a couple of years, I think, he was a taxi driver on the Falls Road. So these aren't normal taxis.
Yeah, we've had a previous guest who was telling me it was new to me, but yeah, go on, you describe it better.
Yeah, so as far as I remember getting these taxis when I was a kid, they were kind of, they have them in places like Mexico.
Yeah.
There's a Spanish name for them, they're called like colectivos in Mexico, I think.
Yeah, lots of places, India have them.
So you basically a taxi will come over, stop wherever, you'll get in, you tap when you want to get out, and you give what used to be 10p in the 70s, became, you know, 50p a pound. And it stems from when the troubles kicked off, 69, 70, all the public transport said, we're not going near West Belfast. Yeah. So these taxi drivers decided, well, we'll be the public transport. And this is a bit of a funny tongue-in-cheek song about it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's play the Falls Road Taxi Man. And this is by the Men of Property.
As I roamed out through Belfast town, around by Castle Street, a seeking transportation, a young man I did meet. They said his name was Cosgrove, some called him Desperate Dan, for he risked his life 10 times a day as a Falls Road taxi man. Well, I put 2 bob into his hand, I climbed inside the car. Well, that was all they charged us for travelling near or far. With 14 other passengers, we made a noble band as we set out from Sawyers with the Falls Road taxi man. On board an expectant mother with not too long to wait, we hit the ramps at Hastings Street. I knew it was too late, but Cosgrove, he was smiling with a baby in his hand. We've just delivered a rebel boy, cried the Falls Road taxi man. Well, when we got to Divis Street, he said, now bar your door. The 12 apostles in the back, you'd better get on the floor. For an armoured car was across the road, he said, we'll have to ram. with my bumper stole from Mackie's, cried the Faldero taxi man. Well, when we reached the White Rock Road, on the floor we had to lie. The tracer bullets from the tanks, they were lighting up the sky. Well, above the din, a man called out, oh, please stop if you can. You'll have to use your parachute, cried the Faldero taxi man. Well, when we got to Kennedy Way, the night was growing dark. We dropped another passenger just outside Casement Park. There was a riot going on, we upset the soldier's plan. Oh, we've just ran over the major, cried the Faldero taxi man. Our destination just west of Lanadoon. We knew that we would all be safe in God's own country soon, where the cops did not adventure and where the paratroops ran. So we all shook hands and said farewell to the Faldero taxi man.
Hey, the Faldero taxi man. That's the choice of my guest tonight. So it's Kevin Jones, who's a Belfast man, but now living in Sheffield. We're going to get to your Sheffield bit. We're not saying that. So it's deserted island this. And the point of the show is people born in the island of Ireland who are now living in South Yorkshire. And Kevin's one of those people that fits the bill perfectly. But we're looking for more. So if you know any more, get in touch with the show. DesertedIslandThis@gmail.com. We should say, Kevin, that you're doing really well in Sheffield now, aren't you? So you've got quite a senior job in a council, and you're not that boring. Well, we'll come on to your job at the end, but just I think it's useful to people to know it. So you're kind of working with homeless and vulnerable people, but you're in a manager's position, aren't you, there? So,
yeah.
And we need to work out the bits in between, don't we? But let's, for now, let's get back to you and your kind of teenage years, and so music was quite a big part of your life back then, yeah.
Yeah, so I did really well in school up till GCSE. I had a really, really good GCSE results, and I think, I went to a Catholic school, a grammar school, where you had to get the A, you had the 11 plus to get in, and the transfer test and stuff. So I did really well up to a point, and then I discovered something called punk music.
Okay.
Music was there throughout growing up. So I've grown up with my parents' music taste, which is my dad's an Irish musician, traditional musician, but also they like rock music and Neil Young and stuff as well. Then I discovered, I suppose, punk.
What kind of punk? Back to like Sex Pistols.
The first stuff, it all comes from like stuff like pop punk stuff, first of all, like Green Day and Blink 182. That was
that was stuff of that era. Yeah.
And then I got into Rage Against the Machine. I fell in love with Rage Against the Machine, who aren't a punk band per se, but they did a covers album that has loads of stuff on it. And some of the small songs they covered is In My Eyes by a punk band called Minor Threat, who are this sort of like cult underground punk band in the 80s in America. Yeah, yeah. So I fell in love with all of that, and then I discovered all the UK punk and the Clash and Buzzcocks, and then of course we had the Stiff Little Fingers and the Undertones, who I love to this day. But then I really got into, started playing, in a band when I was 15.
Guitar
and vocals, and then played my first gig in a pub with all these older punks when I was 16, and then fell in with the sort of DIY punk scene in Belfast, and we had a venue called Gyros. as in your dole, your gyro, which was volunteer run. It was funded.
Was that mixed religion?
Absolutely, yeah. So I was going to say that then opened up. So I was lucky in the sense that my dad was teaching. He went to teaching in integrated schools.
Yeah.
So I did eventually start meeting and become friends with people who are from a unionist background.
Yeah.
But the real friendship came when I met you. Went to a punk gig.
Yeah.
And you're sort of underage drinking and all that. Yeah, you know, in the pub, sneaking in the pub when you're 15, getting the cans.
Moshing.
Yeah, moshing, all of that, up to no good. And then meeting one of my best friends I became friends with, I was in a band with him, was from the Craigie Road, which is East Belfast.
Yeah.
Like, his next door neighbours were loyalists. Do you know? And it didn't matter.
Right. Yeah,
and the
same
thing happened in the 70s when punk first came about, and you hear a lot of old punks talk about it. But that happened throughout. Do you know, that's still happening, and that's the beauty of like music and community, you know?
Yeah, that was great. So I didn't know you played, because a lot of the people that come on the show are musicians and come in and bring in the guitar and sing songs. Would that have been possible?
In theory, it would have been possible, but I suppose it's been a few years. I do still play, but like electric guitar, it's been a few years since I've done a lot of acoustic stuff. But I mean, one of the songs, one of the next song choices, the Christy Moore song, I have a story related to it. I used to play this song.
Okay.
So this song is actually by, the song's called Palestine, it's on Christy Moore's new album.
Yeah.
This song's actually written by an American singer called Jim Page.
Okay.
Not Jimmy Page, like Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
This small sort of unknown troubadour protest singer called Jim Page.
Yeah.
And the first gig I ever played was playing guitar with my dad, playing a cover of Peter Gabriel's Biko, which is a great song about Steve Biko, South African, anti-apartheid and ANC guy. Supporting this guy called Jim Page in a bar called the Hercules, and I was 13, just playing, strumming along with my dad.
Jim
Page was playing live and we were supporting him, so he was an old friend of my dad's and had stayed with my mum and dad over the years. Then the album that the song Palestine is on came out a couple of years later, and then my dad learned the song and played the song. And then I used to play versions of it with him in the folk clubs and stuff as well, and sing with him and stuff.
Because Christy only came out a few years ago.
It's a new album, I think, last year.
So I've heard it before, but I didn't realise the history behind it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, we better play it, aren't we? So, Palestine, this is the Christy Moore version.
Let me tell you a story, I'll be quick as I can. Terrible news from the Holy Land. Pictures of children etched in my mind, buried in the rubble on the firing line. The Jews and the Arabs lived one and the same. 1,000 years, then the Zionists came like a river, came like a flood. Al-Nakba was written on the wall in blood. Talk about settlers from far away. Talk about dollars from the USA. Talk about blast bombs, the bullets and the lead. The shadow of the jackboot hanging over your head. What can you do when they demolish your home? Olive trees buried and gone. Do you dare to resist? Stand on the road with a rock in your fist. In Palestine. In Palestine. They talk about peace like it's a moral obligation. There'll never be peace under occupation. Talk about talks to the beat of the drum. 70 years, Nakba rolls on. We need to talk about the friends that we endorse. The rockets and the tanks and the warships, they disperse. No wonder it seems to be an undemocratic version of democracy in Palestine. In Palestine. Let me tell you a story, I'll be quick as I can. There's terrible news from the Holy Land.
Yes, Christy doing Palestine, yeah. So, yeah, he's a great legend, old Christy, and he's... I say that's the one song that I knew out of the six choices of my guest tonight. So thanks for that one, yeah. So, so you're a Christy fan as well. You've got a big mix of stuff, haven't you?
Yeah, I love Christy. I mean, he's a prolific songwriter and like a national treasure, still going strong as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, that album's recent, isn't it, from last year? Yeah, he was a big feature in my house. I mean, that we were talking off air about Christy. You know, the folk thing, Christy's done it. The folk thing is to play cover versions and change the words as well. Do you know, yeah, songs are passed down. And the Men of No Property song that we played earlier, there were some of the great songwriters involved in that band, Brian Moore, and Bill Rolston and Joe Mulhern. They all wrote and performed songs that Christy picked up as well.
Because he doesn't write that many himself, Christy, does he? Most of them he's made his own, but he's just so... Well, he's got such a lovely voice and his style of guitar playing. He's fantastic.
He's fantastic, yeah. And he's great at the like stuff that's a bit tongue-in-cheek as well. That's not one of them, of course.
No, he's great at comedy.
Somber,
song,
yeah.
Anyway, back to you.
Yeah.
So let's pick up your life. So we just kind of got your teenage years, but I suppose you're in a band. So how far did you get with like your own kind of music?
Yeah, so the first couple of bands were just teenage bands, playing punk stuff, a bit of ska. There was a bit of ska going on, which there often is at that age.
Oh, ska! Right,
yeah, yeah. And then punk. I was in for a penny, in for a pound. Fell in love with it. Had a big Mohican. Started getting tattoos, all of that, and then I was away with it. Then I played in a band that was kind of heavier punk, like hardcore punk. I started about 17, so from about 17 till I was about 21, we did a lot of touring across Europe.
Fantastic! You knew singing as well.
Yeah, I would say more guldering than singing in that band, more shouting than singing. Yeah, but
it's more about. Well, it's confidence, isn't it? So you must have had that. Where did that come from, that confidence?
I have no idea, because I was a very anxious, I was an anxious child as a young child.
Yeah.
I think it came from music. As soon as not the first time I picked up a guitar, there's all those hours you spend in your room But the first time I played it in front of people, I just didn't feel nervous.
Yeah.
I felt amazing, and I still feel that the same today. I'm way more nervous about... you know, meeting new people or a job interview, one of the most nerve-wracking things you can do.
As
long as I know I'm well rehearsed, playing a gig, I love it.
It's amazing. So you writing your own songs?
Almost always. So from 14, 15, you putting bands together, playing covers and stuff. And then from 16, 17, just always writing your own stuff. Didn't see... any other option. You know, that was the thing in the punk scene, is like you do something new. You don't do all the covers and all of that. Later got into playing some covers and stuff, you know,
that's fun, just do your own thing.
So yeah, early 20s,
and you're pretty successful then, isn't it? You got a tour.
People
were paying to see you.
It was all DIY, you know, like all these communities. We ended up in like squats and everything in Eastern Europe.
So did you have internet times? Were you getting picked up?
MySpace,
I was going to say. It's hard to pick what generation it was, wasn't it? So that was like 2006.
MySpace was about 2000. I think it came. 2005,
2004. Maybe,
2005 was when it kicked off. So you put songs up, and then, you know, all of a sudden there's 1,000 streams, there's 20,000 streams. There was no money in those days, though you get 0.00 pence now from a Spotify stream, but there was nothing from a MySpace. Not that we knew of, anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, it took us all over. You know,
so people
know you from, and which yeah. we were getting booked. We were going to France, Germany, all around, but wow. all underground, all DIY. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, do you have a manager?
No managers, no booking agents, none of that. All just do it yourself.
Fantastic. Yeah.
And I tell you what, the skills it taught me.
Yeah.
Try planning a tour in a rusty old van.
So was it your band? Were you in charge?
Yeah, me and the drummer in that band, we did all the organising, the booking, and you know, the budgeting, shall we say, yeah. you know, trying
and how
to
old
make ends meet.
18, 19, 20, 21
Wow. Went all over the place, played hundreds of gigs all over.
And you got back in one piece?
Back in one piece, no sat navs, AA, used to print off those AA directions, you know, one bit at a time, what were they called? You print them all off, and it would say, you know, take this junction 42, take the second exit, the roundabout, crazy, old road maps, and then our rickety van, you know.
What were you doing, the rock and roll stuff while you're there as well? Were you getting...
Of course, yeah.
Pretty drunk after a gig.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, there's a... There was a lot of fun with that, but also there was a bit, you know, more somber tone. You know, there was a bit of, you know, we had a lot of friends that ended up developing problems with addiction all because of that stuff. So there was like, wasn't always sunshine and roses, that kind of stuff. And I've, you know, one of those lucky people that can manage to like have the party and then stop.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? Of course, many people can't, you know.
Well, let's play a song and then we'll talk about kind of, I suppose, why you stopped playing music and went, what happened, and we're from there. So your next song, you've done the Clash one.
Yeah.
So tell us why you picked that.
The Clash are probably my favourite, if not one of my favourite bands of all time. I just think the quintessential punk band. People often talk about the Clash or the Pistols, and if I had to choose, it would be the Clash every time. Just more thought to it, you know, in the lyrics and more diversity in the music as well, you know, dabbled in like ska, reggae, hip hop, all sorts of stuff. In the later albums.
So it's career opportunities, the Clash.
Never not. Every job I offer used to keep you at the dock. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked. I hate the army and I hate the RAF. I don't wanna go fighting in the German gulag. I hate the seven sides boom. I won't open that bomb for you. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked. Every job they offer used to kick you off the dock. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked. Oi, 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 oi. Bus driver, ambulance man, the tickets it breaks the all the time. They're gonna have to introduce conscription. They're gonna have to take away my prescription. Never knocked. Every job they offer used to kick you out the door. Career opportunity, the one that never knocked.
Career opportunities by the Clash again. The choice of Kevin Jones, my guest in the studio tonight. So we're talking about you were kind of in a punk band, yeah. Would you call it a punk band?
Yeah, definitely, very, 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 very punk rock. So we did a lot of touring across Europe, and then that band broke up. Probably was about 21, and then had another couple of bands. Did the same thing. Maybe it got a little bit more sort of not high level, but higher, you know, started, you know, worked with a small label and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. So you must have thought, I mean, did you think you were going to kind of make a living at it?
Oh, I was obsessed, yeah. But because you can't make any money in music, all parallel to that was having real jobs, do you know?
Yeah.
Moving back in the when you're in your early 20s, you know, working somewhere for a year and then using up all your holidays for the gigs and then having to quit for a few months and then...
What kind of jobs were you doing?
Doing casual work. So I did... I did all sorts of labouring with my cousin, doing plastering and all sorts of stuff. I then did work for a period for HMRC, which was, you know, boring at the time for a young man in his 20s. Yeah. But learnt, you know, a bit about admin and case management systems. And
I'm working with people kind of who you don't like.
a little bit of that, yeah, too.
No, it's an important skill, isn't it? Is that,
yeah.
Is that you, when you're at school, you can sit here with... who you want.
Yeah.
And, like when you're in bands and that, you kind of choose that. But at work, you've got to learn to get on with people who you,
absolutely,
you don't need to get on. And so that's stood you in good stead for the council, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has indeed, yeah. But yeah, I did a lot of, always working with vulnerable people too. So did some youth work through music workshops with young people and stuff. And worked for an organisation called the Belfast Youth and Community Group.
Oh, okay. So you were teaching... like vulnerable people or kids,
trying to take kids from sort of deprived areas and like bring them, do bits and pieces, like you're putting on, helping them put on gigs and stuff like that, and like do creative things and do some writing.
So that was your start of kind of getting into the world you're in now in terms of work.
I guess so. And then I went on to do some work with a refugee charity and spent some time in Greece working with refugees and did some work like that, and then came back and was doing some sort of like stage work and production work around music and production management, working for bigger promoters and stuff. So kind of work stuff's just a range of different things, trying to figure out what I was good at, you know, in your 20s, kind of trying to figure out what's going on, you know.
Yeah.
But all throughout it, playing music, wanting, chasing, cliche of chasing the dream of wanting to make a real go of it, a career. But it's just, you know, it's very few people get there.
So is the point where you kind of said, right, that's enough? Or?
Yeah, I think just after. So my son was born... when I was 27 and around then, and it was like I was still playing, still doing bits and pieces of music, but it just becomes,
I need to get serious.
You have to get serious. It's real. I mean, and not to be condescending to people in their early 20s, because lots of people we know have to have a lot of struggles and have to grow up very, very fast. But I was kind of lucky in that sense where I got to mess around and play music.
Yeah.
But then when a wee baby comes along, you have to get serious. You have to get adult in as they say. You know.
So let's talk about that. What's your son called?
He's called Rory, and I think he's probably listening now.
Hello, Rory.
He's another Irish person that lives in Sheffield, but he's only 11, so we'll give him a few years then. Get him on the show.
Can he talk like his dad?
About football, yeah.
Yeah, a few years time then we'll get him on. Yeah. So, let's talk about you getting to Sheffield. Then is that?
Yeah.
You know, go on. You kind of.
Yeah.
Say
so
in your words.
So Rory was born in Belfast. His mum is from Sheffield originally. We're not together. And we parted ways when he was quite young. But, you know, we'd sort of shared custody and stuff, you know, from early days. And then she wanted to move back to Sheffield when he was about four. So off they went. It wasn't the best thing in the world for me because it was, you know, like many an Irish
person.
She
wanted support from her parents.
Totally understandable, you know, maybe wanted support from her parents and stuff. She had an Irish family, so she had an auntie and stuff in Belfast. But, I wanted to be closer to her grandparents who were getting old and closer to her dad. So I just took the sort of dive and jumped over here.
That's really brave, don't it? Because would you know anyone in Sheffield?
Nobody. There was one other guy from Belfast that lived here at the time that I barely knew, that I met for a coffee one day, and that was about it. And I bumped into him the odd time. He's been around and then come back to live here. But didn't know anybody. Had played a load of gigs and stuff here over the years. Gigs at Corporation and loads of small venues that have long since died, I think. But Yeah, knew it was a good town. Always loved the north of England, always loved Yorkshire. So I thought, what's the worst that can happen, you know?
Yeah. We're running out of time. We've got 10 minutes left. So I want to play this song because it's hip-hop. Just tell us about that first.
Yeah, so this, I put
and we'll
this
come
in.
Back to how you're doing these days. And
yeah. So I put this in because, during the music, it wasn't all punk rock. So at one stage, I was playing guitar in a band that was like a rap group, essentially. And my best friend in the whole world was a Belfast rapper called B McSee. He's called Brendan McCarthy, and he'll hate this because he's kind of retired from this now. But was rapping.
Is that the one you couldn't play any songs?
I wanted to play one of these songs, Ben, but there was no radio edits, so there was lots of expletives.
Yeah, so we couldn't quite get it on this show.
There's obviously the rich...
But people can find him, presumably.
Yeah, they can indeed, and there's some other people. So obviously right now there's a big lot of focus on Kneecap, who are a rap group from Belfast. They are doing something unique with the Irish language, that's for sure. But there were lots of people from Belfast rapping in Belfast, late 90s from the early 2000s, and he was one of them. But Dead Prez, this track, Hip Hop, was a massive influence on us when we discovered it, when it came out sort of whenever, early 2000s. So that's why I wanted to play it.
Okay, let's have it.
When it hit, you feel no pain. White folks say it controls your brain. I know better than that. That's game, man. We ready for that. Two soldiers head of the pack. Matter of fact, who got the
war?
And where my army at? Rather attack and not react. Back to beats, it don't reflect on how many records get sold on sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Whether your projects put on hold in the real world. These just people with ideas. They just like me and you when the smoke and cameras disappear again. The real world is bigger than all these fake records. Wait, po' folks got the millions and my woman's disrespected. If you check 1-2, my word of advice to you is just relax. Just do what you got to do. If that don't work, then kick the facts. If you a fighter, rider, bada, flame ignite, a crowd excited, or you wanna just get high, then just say it. But then if you a lie, pants on fire, wolf cry, agent with a Y, I'm gonna know it when I play it. It's bigger than
shot Biggie Smalls. If we don't get them, they gon' get us all. I'm down for running up on them in they city hall. We ride for y'all, all my dogs stay real. Don't think these record deals gon' feed your season, pay your bills, because they not. MCs get a little bit of love and think they hot, talking about how much money they got. All y'all records sound the same. I'm sick of that fake thug R&B rap scenario all day on the radio. Same scenes in the video, monotonous material. Y'all don't hear me though. These record labels slang our tapes like dope. You could be next in line and sign and still be writing rhymes and broke. You would rather have a Lexus or Justice, a dream or some substance, a Beamer, a necklace, or freedom. Sitting like me don't play a hate, I just stay awake. This real hip hop and it don't stop till we get the popo off the block. They call it
hip hop, hip hop, hip hop.
Hip-hop. Dread Prez, that's the first time we've had that on the show, funny enough. No one else has picked that. No, it's great. Yeah, it's good to have that, the difference, say. So we're getting towards the end. We've only got 6 minutes left. So it's been Deserted Island Disc, if you just join us. It's been a great show. Gone so fast. So it's Kevin Jones Band from Belfast with a Welsh name. We've not even got into about the name, have we? But,
Welsh Presbyterian, yeah. 500 years ago, I think. Was it? And then the story. Across,
yes, yeah. Yes, but, yeah. So we're going to try and squeeze one more song, just because it's a great song. But just to kind of finish off, what we're going to do is just have a couple of minutes to chat, just to finish off saying how you're doing now, and really kind of, what, how... So you're saying you moved from Belfast to Sheffield, not knowing anyone. Did you have the job first before you came over? Or?
No, so I was doing a bit of like freelance work, music stuff. I was doing some stage management stuff, and I had some things lined up. But I knew I was looking at jobs around homelessness, looking at jobs in shelter,
yeah,
and in mental health. And I ended up working. The first job I got was working for Sheffield Mind,
yeah,
for a few months, and then I got the job, in homeless service in the council. Which was, I guess, nearly 6 years ago now.
Yeah. And then you've had a few promotions.
Yeah,
within the council. Yeah.
Climbed the ranks a wee bit, and I think lucky to have done it pretty kind of fast, you know. But
so just say your job now, you're kind of responsible for people who are kind of, well, rough sleeping or had been rough sleeping. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's more in the term. It's multiple disadvantages. So it's people with experiences like homelessness,
yeah,
mental health, domestic abuse, contact with the criminal justice system, and drug and alcohol problems. So it's like people with the most complex end of things.
Yeah.
And I kind of found my way into that. I'd done some work with some homeless and some volunteering with some homeless charities in Belfast.
Yeah.
Done some work with refugee support groups as well. And then the youth work. So I had this background supporting vulnerable people, and then I had this other experience that was about project management around music, working on big gigs and stuff, and I was working for promoters. So accidentally I'm in this thing called commissioning now in the council, which is like a term that nobody understands, and sometimes I don't understand it either. Climbed up pretty swiftly, did a qualification. Ended up doing a postgraduate qualification despite not having a degree, which is good. But I had enough. They let me on the qualification because I had enough work experience, you know. And then doing really well now. It's a challenging job, and working for a big organisation, it's not always sunshine and roses.
No, I can imagine. Do you think it's? I mean, we haven't got time, have we? And I feel bad just starting now. But just in general, kind of how homelessness in Sheffield's doing. Is it, would you say it's getting worse, getting better?
I would say it's getting exponentially worse across the country. There's different ways you can look at the stats, there's different ways you can look at the data, but the fundamental thing that we're not doing in the whole country is building enough social housing, so everything else apart from that is sort of crisis management. But there's a lot of positive work going on, you have to stick with it when you're working in complex systems and trying to help people.
Yeah,
it's small steps, isn't it? So
yeah. Oh, good on you. We're going to have to end the show, I'm afraid. It's flown by. It's so good. So we're just going to have a last song, which we're not going to have time to play all of it, but it's a beautiful song. It's The Young People by Lancôme. Any particular reason apart from being a beautiful song?
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. It's a bit of a somber end. I guess it's around suicide and young people's mental health, and unfortunately I know Lancôme people are friends of friends, and we've had some friends in common over the years that we've lost to suicide and to addiction, but this is also a bit of a joyous song. There's like there's a joyous theme to it, that you know, make life last and look after your friends. So oh, that's a nice way to finish.
Yeah,
typical Irish, a bit depressing.
Well, that's it.
A bit uplifting at the same time.
So thanks so much. It's been amazing. So everyone enjoy a couple of minutes of The Young People by Lancôme. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
the day that